There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Salut, mon nom est Clark Rogers, l'hôte de F1 hebdomadaire. Je serai joint par le chien chaud aimant, Steve Forb, et le Carry le roi, Nasser Hamid. C'est podcast numéro 287, juin 25 2008. Steve?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com web server, the ads that interest you. From swag to brushes, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Merci Yahoo Ads, et puis merci Monsieur Forbes. There you have it, and there you go. Vive la France. The French Grand Prix is over. Steve, did you enjoy the race?
Yeah, it was one of the better races of the season. A lot of good racing in the field. Some of it up towards the front, some of it towards the back. But several good passes and a lot of close cars together for a change.
Good for you. On today's show, Lewis and the British press, the FIA raising their prices, Massa Mania sweeping the land. So there you have it. That's today's headlines. I got everything a little mixed up, but I'll get over it. No, I enjoyed the French Grand Prix. I thought it was pretty good. A little disappointed with Fernando, like I always am these days. It's pretty much going to be one big disappointing year for moi. But Renault's getting better. I think BMW didn't show the pace that they expected.
Both cars in the points for Renault.
Exactly.
It's the first time
both cars season. In the points. BMW, I think sometimes Renault looks a little bit better than BMW. Nick Heidfeld obviously having a lot of problems. Yeah. And, of course, you know, I don't want to just get all over Lewis Hamilton, but I think the FIA were exaggerating a little bit on the penalty when he was trying to pass Sebastian Vettel. When you look at the replay, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he gained any advantage by cutting the chicane. He'd already made the pass. He just got himself into a bad spot where he couldn't get back on the track. And basically, if he tried to not cut the chicane, he'd have taken out Bourdais.
Okay.
And you know, or whoever was in front of him. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a tough penalty, but maybe it's a bit of a rookie mistake in not knowing how much track you've got left to pull that pass off.
Exactly. And don't forget, Kimi Raikkonen got the drive-through penalty in the previous race for, I believe, the tires weren't put on the car 3 minutes before. Blah, blah, blah.
The whole thing in Monaco.
Jackie Stewart's out there screaming conspiracy. The FIA's out of control. I don't know. I think they're trying to be even-handed and fair. And obviously, when you're a high-profile driver.
It's going to happen. You know, if he hadn't gotten it, there would have been people screaming.
Exactly.
He got it, so there are people screaming. It just depends on which group of press you're looking at. Because if he hadn't gotten it, you know, who knows. The French press would have been screaming because he, you know.
And Vettel was happy with it, so that's what counts. Anyway, the white Camry has just pulled up. I see Nas throwing himself into the studio as he runs in, huffing and puffing. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. And hello to everybody. And good to have Mr. Fob back. And I see he has this slumber party, sir. How was your vacation? I understand you were on a baseball vacation.
It was very enjoyable. Spent the night on the ball field at AT&T Park in San Francisco, so it was kind of fun.
Well, interesting. Did you do any bonding with Barry?
No. Sorry to say, Barry was not at the event.
A lot of people showed up there?
Yeah. There were probably 150 people.
Man, I wish they were doing a slumber party at Monza. I'll go.
Yeah. Don't worry.
Well, you can take your tent to Monza and pitch it and you can have your own slumber party.
Yeah.
Get some of your best friends. And
You know, Monza is a favorite track for a lot of people, and this website, pitpass.com, the editor or the owner is Chris Balf. He likes the place so much that I was reading his bio or something one day. He got married at Monza Autodromo.
Wow. Yeah, people sometimes have so much passion. Yeah. And it's nice that he could actually find a partner, a significant other, a woman that would participate in that. You know, a lot of women don't really care about racing. So good for him.
You should know.
I do know, but we're not going to open that can of
worms. No.
Today. Anyway, so Mossamania is taking over the world from the Forum to Italy. And, Steve, I mean, what do you think? I've never been a Massa fan. Obviously, I've always called him Cupid Doll, and that goes back to the Schumacher years. But apparently the luck is rolling towards his way.
Every time, got to love the motorsports press that, you know, 2 weeks ago, Kubica was the man because he finally won his first race, and he was leading the championship points. And now Felipe wins a race, and he's leading the championship points. So now he's the man to beat. It's almost to the point of being ridiculous. I think Felipe is a good driver. I don't know that we could classify him as great. He makes some silly mistakes, but you know, he's a good driver. He's got a good package. It's to be expected, especially if Kimi's luck continues to go as it has the last several races, where he's just getting that one thing that's screwing up his day.
Well, I do enjoy this season because after every Grand Prix, we have a new leader.
Yeah, and that's my favorite thing in a season is if we have, you know, several lead changes. I hate it when someone runs away with it. I hate it when, you know, it's nothing but red cars on the podium. It just I like seeing other people come in and get points and challenge.
And more often than not, championships are won by other people's DNFs. Cablamos, or what have you. Schumacher, Cablamo, Fernando, yeah. Bravo. Yeah. I mean, that's how it is. This is Formula One. So, you know, kudos to Massa. He did a good race, didn't panic. He you know, was told, you know, Raikkonen's not going to make it.
And that's the good thing about the current point system is that it rewards consistency.
It does.
You know, there was a whole fiasco last year, Bernie wanting to go, well, I want more points for wins.
Exactly.
Well, you know, if a guy wins five races and a DNF's in 15, does he deserve to be champion? You know, that's the kind of way I see it. The guys who finish races, who finish in the top five consistently, are the guys who deserve to be the champion.
Massa is not going to be World Drivers Champion. I don't think so. I think Kimi's still the man to beat.
Yeah,
he's the fastest on the track. He's got the best car. And what's good is this gets wrapped up at the end of the season, and Kimi Raikkonen is now, I think, could put behind him some of his bad luck. And we'll see what happens at Silverstone. But Kimi Raikkonen, for me, looks like the man to beat.
Well, you're the one who's always talked about the fact that, you know, you're going to have those races where something goes wrong and screws up your day.
Exactly. It's a numbers game.
And it doesn't matter. It's going to happen to you at some point in the season. Sometimes it'll happen in the first three races. Sometimes it'll happen in the last three races. You know, Fernando's second championship where Michael Schumacher was just having this phenomenal season and he get to Japan and then boom.
Well, it was the second wind in the season that really blew everybody away. But you can't make it last, especially when your dependability has been so good. Eventually, it must come to an end. That's the way it is.
Yeah, and not only that the thing that happened to him in France was really a weird thing for a team like Ferrari to have happened. To lose an exhaust manifold like that is just really kind of bizarre.
And the other side of the coin was a lot of...
Was there white powder on that?
No, I thought he was driving a red McLaren with that thing
exactly.
Flapping around.
Flapping around, yeah. But some people said that the FIA should have black flagged him. They should have told him to come in. That could have been a dangerous component that it could have flown off, which it eventually did. And those were some more of the reasons where the FIA conspiracy was going on and on and on.
Yeah, well, but I personally believe the stewards, when they saw it moving around back there, should have basically told him, when he comes in for his next pit, get it off the car.
I agree, and they made no attempt to do that, so I was bewildered by that. But nevertheless, he was able to hold on second. Great drive for Kimi Raikkonen, very important 8 points. And once again, Ferrari
is kicking some butte. Nass, have you gone out and bought your garden gnome, and have you now joined the Massenet's movement?
No. No, I agree with what you just said, that this is Kimi Raikkonen's championship and Massa's only hope. You know, it's very bad luck for Massa that Kimi has such a big problem, but he's only gained 2 points because the guy finished 8. So I still think this is Kimi Raikkonen's championship because he has a very good package, and I think he's overall a little bit faster driver than Felipe Massa. So my 2 rupees are still on, or 2 Finnish kronas are still on Kimi Raikkonen. But, you know, a few thoughts on the race itself with your express written consent.
Absolutely. If it's the French Grand Prix, I want to hear about it.
Oh, thank you, sir. And actually, positive comments, so even better. I may repeat if you want me to. Anyway, a race took place in cow country, but Bernie is still looking to milk the cow for more cash at some other venues. And we were talking before the show, some other name came up of a track, Rouen, which, you know, used to host French Grand Prix. I don't think it will happen there.
It would be tough. I mean, it's been such a long time ago. Even though they've shown interest in coming back, I just don't see how would they be able to get the funds and get this whole thing going. But also, on the other hand, we've had good news. Apparently, Bernie has said that so far he's happy with Manicool coming back next year and the following year because I guess contractually they're signed up.
He's obligated to bring him there.
And he didn't have any bad things to say, especially post-Canada. Canada where they were, you know, the track was breaking up. There were, you know, some, you know, it's a great facility, but it's still not really up to F1 specs. It should be a little bit better. And Manicour is a gorgeous piece of real estate. I mean, it looks wonderful. The track is outstanding. We have no breaking up. Maybe it's the fromage they put in the asphalt. I do not know.
Yeah, well, I think maybe Bernie's problem in France, too, is that paddock is tiny.
Well, yeah, but the people like it close and cozy. It's so you could feel the love.
Have you been there?
I've never been to Manicour.
Okay. Well, you know, now I hear the local government is also trying to throw some money and keep the race there. And I think they should keep there. And we have a more, a little bit on this motorsports mantra here. Drive of the race was truly done by Jarno and his Toyota. Very impressive performance. And Piquet Jr. may have made a point or two to save his butte with Briatore, and I'm happy for him.
I agree. I'm very happy for him. And legitimately, he had a good race.
He did.
I mean, holding off 2 McLarens is not an easy task. And if you're a nervous little whippersnapper, it's not going to happen. But he did it. He did a good job. And I was very impressed with the drive.
And the result was no surprise given the package of the prancing horse. Kimi's pole was the 200th pole position for Ferrari team, which was very impressive. And just for historical note, their first pole position was at Silverstone in 1951 with Jose Fraulein Gonzalez of Argentina, which he converted to Ferrari's first ever win in Formula One, a tradition that continues to this day. Okay, as far as the track is concerned, your beloved Manicour, I must say that after watching, you know, of course here it was tape delay at 10 in the morning, so early in the morning I taped the GP2 race, so I watched the GP2 races before the F1 race, and you know, the track is not Spa or Suzuka, but it is good enough to be on F1 schedule, and Bernie, I think, this is just my humble opinion, Bernie should back away from his constant bickering about Manicours and Silverstone.
I agree completely.
And Massa won Kimi's race, I think. But, you know, what goes around comes around. A little bird still tells me that the Brazil Grand Prix last year was Massa's race. So, you know, what goes around comes around is kind of deal. He is now the first Brazilian. This is pretty impressive since Ayrton Senna in 1993 to lead the World Championship. And Ayrton Senna led briefly in 93 after he won the Monaco Grand Prix. But the pace of Ferrari should ensure another red champion this year. Massa now has more wins this year, so he must be feeling very high, as he should. But, you know, it was pretty obvious by Kimi's control of the pace before his exhaust problem slowed him down that it will take a few DNFs or mistakes by Raikkonen for Massa to be world champion. If Massa can, I was thinking the other day, when was the last time a number 2 driver became world champion? And I really could not point to one driver in the last 30 years. Not that Massa is number 2, but it's generally accepted he's not as quick as Kimi.
So typically the number 2 driver would be challenging for the world championship because they are number 2.
Yeah, and so his thing is, you know, if Kimi, you know, I remember one year Senna had two, he ran out of fuel, petrol, in both the British and German Grand Prix and did not score, I think, any points in the late race stages. So things can, you know, if Raikkonen had not finished this race and Massa had picked up 10 free points, he needs another one or two of those. So it's very interesting. And different people leading, I like it very much. Another domination by Ferrari in 2 weeks at Silverstone, which I fully expect, will disconnect the Vodafone McLaren drivers from the chase. And we're not talking about the NASCAR chase here, okay? Hamilton's lack of experience shows in a panic situation, and Crash.net said it best on their website. Lewis Hamilton discovers the true price of his costly Canadian Grand Prix error 2 weeks ago. And I got to say something about Lewis Hamilton. He is finding out the hard way that you can have all the speed in the world and all the talent in the world, but just like Montoya, it takes a little bit more to win races and championships. And I think what he's doing this year, like climbing on the back of Alonso's car, I think it was in Bahrain, this mistake, the Canadian mistake. I expected all these mistakes last year. And last year he just had a great run, and it caught up to him towards the end of the season, which cost him the championship. Now it's happening. And so he really needs to slow down and become more of a thinking man's driver. I mean, there's no denying of the pace and talent. The guy is very quick.
He's very talented. But I think what's different from last year is it was his first year. He was listening to Papito. He didn't have the paparazzi.
Now, who is the Papito? Anthony or Ron?
Well, you have Papito 1 and Papito 2.
Okay.
And they're like Siamese twins. You can't separate them. You notice Anthony's at every race.
As he should
wherever be. Ron goes, Anthony goes.
Oh, good, good.
I don't like it. But anyway, but this year he's got more paparazzi, you know, the big rings, the chiquitas, and I'm not talking bananas here. And I think it's a distraction. And the good life is not good when you're in Formula One. You need to be a little more machismo, like a Schumacher, you know, totally focused.
Oh, yeah.
No distractions.
Well, absolutely. The other disadvantage he has this season over last is he doesn't have a former world champion as a teammate, helping him get his car set up perfectly for every track.
Yeah, but he still is very quick.
He's very quick. And the car is very quick. I mean, McLaren's done a good job moving from last year to this year.
I also think that Fernando may have been more of a balancing influence.
Well, you know, top drivers always, any top professional will always do very well when he's up against a good competitor.
I was just going to say, it ups your game.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to play basketball against Michael Jordan, you have no choice but to get better. You may not get as good as him, but you will improve your game if you want to.
Well, I expect Lewis Hamilton to improve. I mean, he's got
There's no question about it. I mean, the guy is still a couple of years away from 25.
So exactly. And that's one of the problems. He's young. He'll make more mistakes, but he'll learn, and he'll be world champion eventually when he goes over to Renault maybe in a couple of years.
Yeah, but I like Kimi Raikkonen's always positive attitude in one of the
very positive
interview. They were asking him about this problem. And he said, well, it's disappointing, but not the end of the world. And I'm glad it's not. I sure want to see a few more Formula One races. But good to see another face on the podium. Jarno truly did a good job holding Kovalainen back. That was very exciting.
Phenomenal race.
Yeah.
That was actually, I thought that was the pinnacle of the whole Grand Prix for me, was Jarno truly and really finding his testicular fortitude.
And in a TF1 of all the cars. And in cases like these, most of the time, especially towards the end, they normally take each other out. So it was very good to see both of them
clean
finish.
Racing, tight lane. And Jarno truly knew what he had to do because he did not want that curse.
Yeah, this was his first podium finish in 3 years. And it was an error on last lap at the same track a few years ago that when truly felt the loss of love from his then boss, Flavio. And you know, if you
cost
have
of his job,
yeah, if you have Flavio's love, you go places.
Exactly.
Kovalainen was smart enough to gain some much-needed points from McLaren, but he came close to taking Trulli to the kitty litter towards the end. But I must say, now we have had how many races? 8 races,
something like that.
Okay, you know, everybody was asking who is this, who is, how good is so and so. But after so many races now, I will say, this is my, again, humble opinion, let's see what you folks have to say. Despite no point for Hamilton, it is pretty clear now that Heikki Kovalainen is not going to do to Lewis what Lewis did to Alonso. What say you, Mr. Favre?
He hasn't been consistent enough to really put it to Lewis. He can race with him, but he is not nearly as quick.
Mr. Roger?
I'm not sure. I think Heikki Kovalainen is doing a pretty good job. I think he's keeping up with Lewis. Unfortunately, penalties, mistakes. And don't forget, you basically have two young rookies in a top team, which is very unusual.
You basically right. have two sophomores, so neither of these guys have any wealth of experience.
And this isn't a team that normally don't take rookies exactly. and inexperienced people. So we all agree that
absolutely.
Lewis will keep an edge on
absolutely. Hickey. For me, the biggest story of the race is Toyota doing so well with Yarno Trulli, who is an old hand, and Williams Toyota, really complete disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what happened.
You know, in this day and age of manufacturers' involvement, I just cannot see a customer car company team with a engine from a manufacturer who's also in racing beating. I mean, Williams has a good chance of beating Toyota, but I just don't see them coming back to winning ways.
You mean like
I don't think there's any. I think you have a very, very, very slim chance. As they start to dumb down the sport again, maybe. But as it stands right now, there's no way a non-manufacturing team is going to win the championship. They just don't have the resources to.
Exactly.
I think the biggest problem is when that manufacturer, who's an engine supplier, is also in Formula One. Let's not forget when Williams Renault was winning world championships, or Renault Benetton, Renault wasn't a team in Formula One.
Right.
And they didn't have that competition. They were supplying really terrific motors. And unfortunately now, that's not happening. You
well,
can't get
no,
an engine supplier
yet.
That's also not a team.
Yeah.
So I don't think a team that also supplies engines has ever even won a race. Am I wrong?
What's that?
Red Bull.
Red Bull?
Red Bull hasn't won a race.
What was your question, sir?
A supplier of engines.
Basically
who's also
a privateer who's basically using someone else's engine won a race in the modern era.
No, it will be very hard.
Sauber, who used to use Ferrari motors.
No, you are never going to win a race using Ferrari engine.
Thank you very much.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah. So,
unless they're both DNF.
And
yeah.
for some reason, Williams shows some progress occasionally at a few races, but at the French Grand Prix, they were dismal.
Yeah. And I hate to say this, but, you know, so much of success in racing is on the package you have. This is Nico Rosberg's third season. It's pretty obvious he's going to go third year without a win. And, you know, when he first came, his debut in Bahrain.
I remember that.
Remember,
race.
He had
the fastest lap.
Fastest lap. He had to pit early, and everybody was going gaga.
Yeah,
you know,
he should have gotten that McLaren contract right there.
Yeah. And, you know what? I tell you what, it's pretty obvious that Sebastian Vettel will be in a good team next year. I won't be surprised if Nico Rosberg goes another year or two without a win. He should get out of that team if he wants to win.
I hate to say this, but sometimes loyalty in Formula One doesn't pay.
Well, not if you want a championship.
And I do feel sorry for Nico because there was a certain amount of loyalty to Frank Williams because Frank Williams is a good guy. And it's a big team. So I am disappointed for Nico. I think he expected his first win a long time ago.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like one of those things. Where do you go? I mean, the problem Nelson Piquet is facing now, he is measured against Alonso. If he does not out-qualify this guy whole season, people will remember that, oh, he could not run with with Alonso.
Yeah, he'll never get a seat with a manufacturing
team. Yeah, same with Heikki Kovalainen. He really needs to dominate Hamilton, otherwise people are going. Otherwise, you will be like the Buttons of the world, the Barrichellos, the perennial number two.
Well, the Barrichellos of the world, where you're basically, you're destined to always be a number two. Because people will always see you as that because that's the pace you showed.
Yeah. I think Nico should leave Williams, and I think he has a good chance of getting a good ride, maybe even BMW. He's German, let's not forget.
They would take Sebastian Vettel long before they take.
I understand,
let me tell you that.
But Sebastian Vettel could be stuck at Red Bull replacing David Coulthard. And I don't know, I can't see Mr.
You know, there are deals available in Formula One. Dr. Tyson can always call.
Of course.
Mr. Marco, they speak the same language.
Absolutely.
And say, oh, we have some BMW engines for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. You've got to remember, Berger is going to be looking for an engine supplier next year because the Ferrari contract is up.
And Berger used to be head of BMW Motorsports some years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things at play here, and we'll see what happens. But Vettel going to BMW is not set in stone. And
of course not.
And Nico Rosberg at Williams next year, I don't know. I hope not for his sake.
I have a feeling that his father did not want him to go to McLaren because his son has raced against Lewis for many, many years. Actually, they raced in Keke Rosberg's karting team, and his son could not beat Lewis Hamilton in Pepito's team. So he knows. He knows the score.
And I agree with that analysis.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you get into a situation, it's like, you know, be careful what you wish for. And you get exposed, then you're done.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, the final 3-point paying positions were taken by Renault-powered cars. Mark Webber was sixth, and not to wish anybody ill will, but he may have Alonso ailment next season if Sebastian Vettel joins him at Red Bull, as the rumor mill has it right now. I will be very shocked if Sebastian Vettel... I don't think there's any way he'll stay at Toro Rosso. He's going to go to Red Bull or BMW or somewhere.
Yeah, I can't see him staying at Toro Rosso for another season. It doesn't make sense for him. It doesn't really make sense for Toro Rosso either.
Yeah, and were you surprised when your muy macho hombre de España made a rare mistake?
No, he did it on purpose. He wanted to pick up Nelsino's, you know, machismo. He wanted to, show Nelsino that he can do it.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a mistake that was on his part, because I think the traffic may have forced him into said mistake.
Come on, Fernando doesn't make mistakes, Nasser. No, what are you talking about?
Physicalis, I'm coming.
Yeah. In front of him. Yeah, and surprisingly, the only retirement of the race after 16 laps was Jenson Button.
Yeah, we talked about that on the race coverage program.
You did?
Yes, which is sometimes known as the Phantom Podcast. That's how dependable these races are now. And no mechanical problems, he just broke his wing too many times. But
he probably ended up with suspension damage.
Yeah, I mean, that's another sad story.
Maybe he should go to Red Bull.
Yeah,
I'll give him some wings.
And I feel sorry for the British. They had so much hope, and they saw so much excitement when Jensen first came on the scene. And boy.
Man, I got to tell you something. If you look at if you go to driverdb.com, which has all the stats for all the drivers, this guy's pre-single-seater credentials, a junior level also. He was in junior level for a short time. Very, very impressive.
Yeah, but so is Vitantonio Liuzzi's.
Yeah, but you know, that's what happens when you don't get into the right package. And I
you make it, you know, a bad team choice. And it's exactly.
Yeah, because Liuzzi's credentials are very, very
outstanding.
Impressive. But it's hard to win with the Toro Rosso.
I agree.
Anyway, you know, one thing I did notice, Mr. Rogers and Senor Fab. The team, I guess the times between teammates and qualifying and practice, whatever, I think is a true reflection of talent of drivers involved. For example, Sutil cannot match Fisichella unless it's raining, and it was obvious again. Alonso, your man is maintaining half a second edge over Piquet Jr., which I'll be surprised if Piquet can run the same pace at Alonso by the end of the season. And the biggest and pleasant surprise is Kazuki Nakajima. He is not allowing Rosberg to run away from him as many expected. Just like, you know, last year we said when Sutil was teamed up with, who was his teammate, Sakon Yamamoto?
Correct.
I mean, I remember you saying, and I said it myself, that there will be a big gap between the two. But Yamamoto ran very close to Sutil. Sutil could not do to him what he did to Christian Albers. And so Kazuki is impressing me. I mean, he's not the next Kimi Raikkonen, that's for sure.
No, but he's
impressing. But he's hanging in there.
He's impressing a lot of people in the media and in the paddock, and I think he's doing a good job,
yeah,
especially with the package. Sometimes this car is not that drivable.
Yeah, and he's impressing people with his performance, not by his, you know, fluent English or whatever. So that's where we have on the Grand Prix de France.
Incroyable, mais vrai.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Keep up the good work, Nas. We'll take a quick break. We got Motorsports Mondial, so we'll be back after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And before I spin the globe, a quick reminder, we have an interview with Kazim Manzoor, of course, one of our early listeners, as well as his father, very successful in karting and now has moved up to open wheel Formula BMW Europe, and he's doing a pretty good job. We'll get more updates, but it's an outstanding interview. Him in Mugello with Nasser Hamid. Huh. Heaven on a plate. Nasser, are you ready? As I spin the globe and go around the world with everybody's famous and favorite segment, Motorsports Mondial. Nasser, how are you? Welcome back to the studio. I hope your supper was a good one.
It was. I'm enjoying some Lipton tea here, courtesy of you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And greetings, as always, and motorsports regards to everybody from Bay Area to Boston to Bahrain.
Excellent.
And I have to ask you one question before we start talking about foreign stuff. The boys were in our backyard, L'Encarnacion. Did you feel the thunder at 1 p.m. California time?
I did.
As the cars went boogity, 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 let's go racing, boys.
I did have to watch a little bit because, you know, they were in the neighborhood. And, of course, as soon as I turn it on, there's a caution. And I was stunned to see that the safety car was a pickup truck.
It's a pace car, Mr.
Tundra. Ray.
Excuse me,
pace Tundra. Car. It was a Toyota Tundra.
Was it?
Yep.
Well, there you go. So I'm looking at this. It's a cow. I just turned it on. They go right to a caution. The pace car is a pickup truck, and we were talking on the forum, wondering whether, you know, does it also deliver hot dogs? And I thought maybe in the Craftsman Truck Series, that part of qualifying would be the delivery of a pack of hot dogs.
But with some Dijon mustard.
Exactly. So there you have it. My thoughts for maybe upgrading the truck series. But yeah.
No, they have a hot dog eating time trial.
Well, thank you very much,
Steven. How fast can you eat five? You know?
Exactly. Okay. So yes, I watched your favorite Le NASCAR and I thought it was Le Ridicule.
I've been to that race at Sears Point twice.
Good for you, Nasser.
Yeah, I'm very proud of those
two. Did you bring back one of those cans of Skol?
You betcha. Okay, now we will talk about motor racing, starting with GP2.
Yeah, I was going to say the globe is spinning, ass.
Thank you, sir. And so is the clock, huh? This was also at Manicours, of course. 100th start and 13th career win for Italian Giorgio Pantano. This ties him on top with Mike Thagwell of New Zealand as the most successful driver in F1 feeder series, and these stats include both GP2 and Formula 3000 combined.
Isn't he the oldest driver in GP2?
I believe he is. That's what they did. You watch the race?
No, I didn't.
I did. That's what they mentioned.
And can you make a career of driving in that series?
No, you should not, because, you know, he is like in his sixth season, and he's had a brief fling in F1 and also raced here. He's a pretty quick driver, but it's one of those things, you know, you can win chances. Same thing with this poor Portuguese kid, Alvaro Parent. He has won British F3, World Series by Renault, won the opening race in GP2. Whatever it is, it's not clicking for him in Formula 1.
Well, good for him.
Well, if he's been racing in it as long as he has and he hasn't won the championship, it's no wonder he's still racing in GP2.
Yeah. Okay, Bruno Senna led from pole position at the start but failed to finish due to mechanical failure. Romain Grosjean also dropped out when in the lead with transmission trouble. Brazilian Lucas Di Grassi, test driver for Renault and making his comeback to the series, was second, with Pastor Maldonado of Venezuela third. Sunday's sprint race was won from 21st starting position by Swiss Red Bull driver Sebastian Buemi, his first in this series. His ardent teammate, Dutchman Jelmer Boermann, was second, and Italian Luca Filippi third. Pantano leads the championship by 7 points. Bruno Senna is second with 28. Buemi is now third on 20 points, 1 point ahead of recent GP2 Asia Series champion, Mr. Romain Grosjean. Next stop, Silverstone. You know, Merrill Lynch used to have a slogan advertising theme, maybe they still do, "We're bullish on America." There are some young drivers in motor racing right now that I'm very bullish on. Top of the list is Romain Grosjean. Sebastian Buemi. Interestingly, Sebastian Buemi finished second to Grosjean in the GP2 Asia Series this year, and it was the same result last year in F3 Euro Series, but Buemi is pretty quick. And if Nico Hülkenberg tells me that this kid is very quick and good driver, I have to believe it. Plus, the results are also there. Two of the drivers that I'm keeping my racing radar on is the Canadian Robert Wickens and Tom Petty lookalike from New Zealand, Mr. Brendan Hartley.
Exactly. Very, and I'd throw in Jonathan Summerton in there just...
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think this second kid from Canada, Daniel Morad, he's also very good. He's now in it. Both him and Summerton are in Atlantics. So we wish all these people all the best.
Absolutely.
Okay, next sporting event we will cover would be the FIA GT Round 3. Took place at Adria, or as the natives would say, Adria. There were three Corvettes in the top four. In the top four, winning car was driven by Fabrizio Gollin and Mike Hesseman. Bartels and Bertolini was second in the Maserati MC12. Next round is on July 6th at Oschersleben in Germania, and we will have results when they happen. Grand Am in Buckeye State. This weekend was very good. There was a lot of motor racing, and I had a very good time, I must say. Grand Am and Buckeye State 1-2 was a throwback to the good old days, Gurney winning over Donahue. Alex Gurney and John Fogarty, a two-time Formula Atlantic champion, took their first win of the season on Saturday at Mid-Ohio Course near Columbus. David Donahue and Darren Law were second. And again, you know, you talk about getting to the top level. John Fogarty is from here, Palo Alto. He won the Atlantic Championship twice. No takers in champ cars.
Unbelievable.
So it's amazing. Now we go to MotoGP, riding a Ducati. Australian Casey Stoner wins at Donington after leading from start to finish. Second win of the season for the defending world champion. Second was Valentino Rossi. Danny Pedrosa of Spain was third on a Honda. Rossi retains the lead in the championship with 162 points. Pedrosa is second on 151 and Stoner third with 117 points. Next stop, Assen in Netherlands this coming Saturday. Do you have any plans to go to the MotoGP race at Laguna Seca?
Not really, Nasser, but I have friends that are going to be attending that race. I'm just not a big two-wheel kind of a guy, having been miserable at driving two wheels in my youth.
How about you, Mr. Fah?
No, probably not.
Okay. Iowa Speedway, a track designed by Rusty Tilke Wallace.
Is that somebody I know?
Yeah. He used to drive the Miller car in your favorite series.
Excellent.
Dan Weldon gives himself the best present on his 30th birthday by winning for Team Ganassi. His second victory of the season. Second was Hideki Muto, Japanese driver for Andretti Green Racing, his best career finish. And third was his teammate Marco Andretti. Both Ganassi drivers, Weldon and Dixon, Scott Dixon that is, gave their race winnings to the Iowa victims, you know, problems they're having, so which was very nice and kind of them, and I'm sure much appreciated by the people there. Dixon still leads the championship with 316 points. Castro Neves is second with 268 points, and 1 point behind is in third is Dan Weldon.
And where's our Danica Patrick update, sir?
Well, you know, I'm not Fox News or ABC, so I don't keep a Danica watch unless she's in the top five. But she was, I think, in the top 10.
Good for her.
Yeah, yeah. And we wish everybody all the best.
Exactly.
But, you know, one thing I'm disappointed in, Clark, I guess I got carried away with all the hoopla. Merger happened just before the Indy 500, and everybody thought, you know, wow, series will be big. But it really is, after Indy, it's just off the radar, off the map.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah. But the reason why I ask about Danica Patrick, because on an interview I listened to just maybe a couple of days ago on F1 Weekly, I believe it was Jules Bianchi, and he said his favorite American race driver was Danica Patrick.
Oh, well, Jules is young. He's Francais. doesn't surprise me.
Exactly. Keep up the good work.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting news, and I hope this will help. This will help the popularity of the sport in the years to come. This week, 9 engine manufacturers are meeting in Indianapolis regarding future of power in IRL. Since 2006, Honda is the sole supplier. There is talk of turbo power. For sure, 2 or 3 different engine makes will be good for the sport, but Tony George's Hoosier Heart will make the final decision. Now that the great divide is over, we can only hope any and all decisions are made for the good of the sport. The thing is, you know, with big companies, they bring in big drivers, big money, and of course, then people, you know, Ford fans will come along and Toyota fans will come along. I really hope they have at least 3 different big manufacturers.
Like, it'd be nice to see them get more than the 1 or 2 chassis they've got now, too.
Yeah, this the car they have. You know, I was watching ESPN does this, the Road to Indy before the Indy 500. I was watching one day the 87 race, which is like over 20 years ago. Those cars look much better than what they have now. These cars are ridiculous. They look like some cars from the Estonian, you know, racing championship.
Well, they look like just upgraded Formula BMW type cars. They're very...
No insult to Estonia, of course.
But, no, of course not.
Very simple aerodynamics. There's not a lot of technology involved in building those cars. I think one of the things IRL would have made a smart move to do would have been to take a hard look at the Panos chassis that Champ was going to go to.
That was a very nice looking car. That was a
sweet looking car.
Very nice.
And when the turbo kicked in, it sounded great. The standing starts were wonderful in the Panos. I was very impressed.
Yeah, but the problem with that car, it was not designed for oval. So, you know, they would have to come up with a new design.
Yeah, you can't throw the wedges in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate ovals.
Okay. You don't like oval racing at all?
I do and I don't. The length of the race is too long.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem.
And then you've got so many, you know, typically you have so many cautions. And the last couple of NASCAR races I've watched on ovals have just been so much strategy rather than really racing.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be good, actually very good for IRL if they can get some names like Montoya, Allmendinger, and Scott Speed to get back to their roots in open wheel racing. Big names bring big crowds. And talking of Montoya and Scott Speed, you know, Scott Speed was on some show, maybe Vintel. What I like about him is whatever happened with him in Formula One, and what is happening now, he has a very good attitude. At least that's what he portrays, you know. I have never heard him talk bad about Formula One or Red Bull.
You mean like Montoya does?
Yeah, that's what I'm coming to. Montoya is like, he was an interview like, Formula One is boring. Here it's so tough to win. You know, dude, why are you dying to go there if it's so boring? You know what it was all about. He just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, he tested for Williams for a while. He wanted to be in Formula One. Yeah. Now it's boring and it's
I think part of the reason Montoya is saying stuff like that is because he thinks that's what NASCAR fans want to hear.
That's true.
Well, of course, anytime you badmouth anything in Formula One, NASCAR boys will love you.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's pathetic, you know. I mean, you were with the top team. I mean,
it's insincere.
Yeah,
well, and you know, the fact that it doesn't do him any good. What is it buying him?
It's not like
him look like a whiny little baby.
Yeah, and it's not like he's winning all the races here. Plus, you know, maybe he should say a few things about how he behaved with Sam Michael during the French Grand Prix. His engineer, you remember that famous incident, the language he has used over the years, and the way he behaved at McLaren. So, I mean, the guy is a tremendous... I mean, anytime you can give a Michael Schumacher a run for the money, I have a lot of respect for him as a racing driver, and so do I for Tracy and Robbie Gordon. But, you know, there's a way to operate to get to the top. Anyhow, moving on to some title sponsor news. Do you remember over a month ago it was announced that Coke will be the title sponsor of the series? Have you seen anything about Coke and IRL?
Nothing.
Okay, I have not seen any sign of Coke sponsorship during the races, and they are not even mentioned on IRL's website, and I went there again today a couple of times to make sure that, you know, I'm not, you know, talking blah, blah, blah.
Maybe that's for next year.
No, I looked at actually, that's what I thought. Then I looked into the press release, and it doesn't say anything about next year, so I don't know.
I heard they're talking to Grey Poupon.
Yeah, that will be very nice. Especially when they go back to Iowa. Maybe the deal went flat before the first sip, and we are again left with Gene Simmons trying to teach the world to sing, I Am Indy. You like that song?
No.
That's a complete waste of vinyl, I would
say.
Thank you. Yeah. Indy Pro Series, TG's Junior Series, 3rd win of the season for British driver Dylan Battistini. all on ovals, which is very impressive. Second was Arie Luyendijk Jr., son of two-time Indy winner, who is originally from the Netherlands. And third was Brazilian lady Ana Beatriz. Rookie Battistini or Battistini now leads the championship with 242 points. Second is Richard Antinucci on 215 points. He is the nephew of Eddie Cheever. And third is J.R. Hildebrand, who is from Sausalito here in Northern California. Now we go back to the item we started with, your favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
Yeah, from Northern California at Infineon Raceway, previously known as Sears Point. Kyle Busch was the winner in his Toyota, and as you already explained, there were too many cautions. And Jeff Gordon, who grew up in nearby Vallejo, was third, and last year's winner, Montoya, was sixth. I got to tell you, this Kyle Busch is a real racing talent. The guy is very, very good.
Well, apparently he will get a test with Honda.
Yeah, the guy
or is... Or Toyota, excuse me.
Yeah, Toyota. The guy is... And so is Joey Logano. You know, it's one of those things. Racing talent is racing talent.
Wouldn't that be cool if Danica Patrick and Kyle Busch got to Formula One?
No, absolutely.
The two drivers for Team Toyota. That would be interesting.
Why are you forgetting Marco Andretti?
Because his papito's forgotten.
Yeah. Busch leads the championship at 2,408 points. Jeff Burton is second with 2,299. Montoya is 19th with 1,643 points, but ahead of NASCAR Knights like Kurt Busch, Jimmy McMurray, and Bobby Labonte. Next stop will be this weekend at Loudoun in New Hampshire, and we will have that race covered next week.
After watching a bit of that race, they need to race far more road courses because those cars are a lot more interesting when they're going left and right than when they're going in one direction.
Oh, nothing beats road racing, let me tell you that. Nothing. And I love if there was a race for 45, 50 minutes. I like a real sprint race, no pit stop, nothing. The only strategy I know is a racing driver going fast. That's what I like to see. Mm-hmm. But times are different. Anyway, the Nationwide Series race in Milwaukee was won by Carl Edwards. And this, Mr. Rogers, when I'm watching a race, I'm watching a race. But every now and then I make a personal observation. And this time it was a personal and alien observation during this race. As you know, all branches of the armed forces have sponsorship in NASCAR, pretty extensive. Navy has a Dale Jr. division. But I also spotted a car in this race sponsored by U.S. Border Patrol. And I was just wondering, maybe you can help me out, if this car has any fans when the series goes overseas.
Not only that, but I heard it's really big in Karachi.
No, it has not made it to Karachi. Okay, from Blue Oval, we have quite a bit of interesting NASCAR news, you know.
Keep up the good work, man.
Yeah, thank you. From Blue Oval to Bowtie, ageless Mark Martin, who I think was born in 1776, or near to that date, is reported to be joining Hendrick Motorsports for next season. Martin was a Ford man for over 20 years with Jack Roush. Like Mr. Bill Clinton, he is from the state of Arkansas. Mr. Clinton is from Little Rock, and Mr. Martin is from Batesville. Clothes, but no cigars. Had to throw that in. Okay, Cat is out of the bag for Bill Davis Racing. Longtime sponsor, Caterpillar. Now, here's a piece of Americana that you may not know. A longtime sponsor, Caterpillar, a company that started out in Cali before moving to Peoria, Illinois, is pouncing away to another team. Richard Childress and driver Jeff Burton will be the beneficiary of the cash litter from CAT. It was with Bill Davis Racing that CAT won the Daytona 500 with Jeff's brother, Ward Burton. Did you know Caterpillar started out here in California?
No.
Actually from near Stockton area.
Earth-moving equipment's never been my forte.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, finally, some sad. This was very sad because, you know, I was looking at on the web on racing news.
And that was very sad.
I saw this news item about poor Scott Calita, and it says posted, you know, reported 45 minutes ago, and it's very sad. This is from the World of Drag Racing. On Saturday, Scott Calita was killed in a qualifying run in Englishtown, New Jersey. He was the son of Connie Calita and a two-time NHRA champion. Calita family has been involved in drag racing for a long, long time. And, you know, Conrad or Connie Calita is a huge name in that business. And the family operate the Calita Air, a cargo charter airline. Scott was married with two kids, and our condolences to the Calita family and drag racing community.
Apparently, the parachute didn't.
Yeah, well, have you seen the accident on
news? I didn't want to look at it.
No, I mean, it comes on you when you're watching these sports program. What happened? I think there was some sort of an explosion that probably disabled the
chute.
And
I mean, those things reach 300 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, that's what they were saying. It was going 300 miles per hour, and then it crashed. And again, you know, they were saying that the escape road should have been a little bit longer. You know, something will come up, and unfortunate things like this happen. But very sad. And that wraps up on the sad note, this edition of Motorsports Mondial.
Nasser, thank you very much for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Stay tuned for the interview that I mentioned earlier in the program, Mr. Kazim Manzoor. And now let's get some...
This is a goodie bag, spished. This is a bonbon bag for you.
Well, I call it, this is meat and potatoes for racing fans who love l'histoire.
Do they do meat and potatoes in France?
Well, we invented meat and potatoes in France.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The Germans stole it from us.
Did not know the cows first appeared in Calais.
Every 50 years.
Wasn't it the French that imported it to America? Meat and potatoes is a big American thing.
I thought hot dogs was the big American thing.
I'll let you guys argue on this.
Yeah, can you start with this now?
Okay, so this is history of the French Grand Prix. Just like the United States Grand Prix, the French Grand Prix has traveled the length and breadth of the country from the shores of Mediterranean Sea and the beautiful Mistral Strait of Paul Ricard to the twists and turns of Dijon-Prenois near the Swiss border. Before many coups, six different tracks had played host to the race since 1950, which is when the Formula One Championship was instituted. And here are some memorable races from each track. And because of time constraint, I won't be covering all the races. We're going to start with?
Reims.
Also known as Reims, for people who speak English. The first Formula One race in France took place at Reims and was won by Juan Manuel Fangio in an Alfa Romeo. The 1953 events here saw a race-long battle in which Mike Hawthorn from England scored his first Grand Prix win in a Ferrari, a second ahead of the Maserati of Fangio. Apparently, this is one of the greatest races because they were changing position throughout the race. Peter Collins from Kidderminster, England, won the race at Reims in 1956. But if you look at the official result, this was very interesting when I was doing some research here. The name of another English driver that day will get your attention, even though he is listed as a non-starter due to damage to his van wall in practice at the famous Tilloy Corner, or as they say in Clark Rogers' fantasy land, Virage de Tilloy. Right, sir?
Correct.
Thank you. The driver of car number 26, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Colin Chapman, and one word describes this man, Lotus. And you know, Bernie Ecclestone was a ex-Formula One driver too. In 1958, Mike Hawthorn won the race for Ferrari. His teammate Luigi Musso was chasing him hard and on lap 10 crashed, suffering fatal injuries. Fangio was fourth in the beautiful Maserati 250F, which I think is one of the most beautiful racing cars of all time. And this was the last time he ever raced in Formula One. And you know, many, many years ago, I was reading his interview this was in Road and Track. And he said, what led to his decision was, of course, the death of this driver. He said, plus, you know, Reims had very long straight, and he said he was not competitive. That day or the car was not competitive. And he says, when I was driving on those long straight, he said, I just kept thinking about what I have achieved and how many friends I've lost. So that's pretty much made up his mind, you know. This is it.
Too much time to think.
Yeah. Another Maserati 250F was seventh, driven by Phil Hill of Santa Monica, California. Carroll Shelby was also in this race, but retired his 250F on lap 9 with engine problems. History was made at Reims in 1961 when Ferrari driver Giancarlo Baghetti in his first Formula One Grand Prix took the checkered flag in a slipstreaming battle with Dan Gurney's Porsche. Baghetti never won an F1 race. An interesting thing about his first Formula One race championship victory in his first race. Before, you know, in those days they used to have non-championship Formula One races. Before this Grand Prix, he had taken part in two other Formula One races, non-championship, and he had won both of them. So he had won his first three Formula One starts. Very, very impressive. Or should I say Grand Prix starts.
And we should mention big get-together this September at Reims with the vintage race cars. It's going to be very exciting stuff.
I was basically 1 hour away last year when it was happening, but I had, you know, commitments at the
I mean, you could reach this vintage racetrack 2 hours north of Paris. Rent a car.
Yeah, I was staying in a town called Givet.
Yeah.
And there were all these signs, Reims, and I was having frisson, but well, just couldn't go. Don't
forget, it's outside of Reims, yeah, closer to the little town of Gueux.
Yeah, oh yeah, sure. Okay, now we go to the second track. I'll let you say it in French.
Rouen.
Okay, for English people, English-speaking people, Rouen. This street circuit hosted French Grand Prix 5 times and is famous for the Nouveau Monde corner. Have you ever been here?
Yes, actually. My mom used to have her shoes made in Rouen.
Really?
Yeah.
You know my friend, Captain Bob Neal, who was with American Airlines for many, many years. He has been to this track and many other tracks like Reims and Nürburgring. And still goes there and drives around. This is, you know, public street, so he drives around and gives me the yearly report, which is very interesting. The first race here in 1952 was an all-Italian affair with Ferrari drivers occupying the podium. Ascari was the winner, Giuseppe Farina second, and Piero Taruffi third. In 1962 and 1964, Dan Gurney gave two famous manufacturers their first Grand Prix wins here. In 1962, it was his and Porsche's first and only win. And in 1964, he gave Brabham team their maiden win. The final Grand Prix at Rouen saw triumph and tragedy. First win for young Belgian Jackie Ickx in a Ferrari in only his 9th Formula One start. On the second lap of the race, local driver Joe Schlesser crashed his air-cooled Honda RA302. The car overturned and caught fire. With the intensity of fire due to magnesium chassis, there was no hope for poor Joe. He was a good friend of Guy Ligier, and all the Ligier racing cars have always carried his initial JS, which I'm sure you're aware of. Three other F1 drivers, and just as a sidebar, in the season of 1968, three other F1 drivers were killed. Jim Clark at Hockenheim, Mike Spence at Indianapolis, and Ludovico Scarfiotti, the last Italian to win Italian Grand Prix in 66. He was killed in a hill climb in Germany, Rossfeld, Germany. Now we come to one of my all-time places that I would like to very much go one day. I'll let you say in Francais.
Clermont-Ferrand.
Yeah. Clermont-Ferrand. Called the Nürburgring of France, it is also known as the Girard Circuit. Hosted the French Grand Prix in 65, 69, 70, and 72. The first Grand Prix in 1965 was dominated by British drivers who occupied the podium. Jim Clark was the winner in his Lotus, ahead of fellow Scot Jackie Stewart in a BRM. John Surtees was third for Ferrari. The 1969 race saw French Matras, but with Cosworth Power finish 1-2. Stewart winning over French teammate Jean-Pierre Beltoise, who used to be a meat delivery driver. And I'm not making any of this up. Beltoise's first job at Metra was that of a receptionist because he was still recovering from a serious racing accident at Reims.
And when he was a meat delivery driver, the meat was always delivered ahead of schedule.
A lap ahead.
Exactly. And very fresh.
Oh, wow. Very good, huh? The final event here in 1972 should have seen Chris Amon's long-awaited first Grand Prix win. But his bad luck continued, and he had to stop after a puncture on his Matra MS-120, which is one of my all-time favorite cars, especially the wide nose at the front. I love that design. But fought back to finish an impressive third. Stewart won in a Tyrrell, and Emerson Fittipaldi was second in a Lotus. And talk about a small world. You were there when this conversation took place. It was in this race that the Formula One career of Dr. Helmut Marko, now the main guy at Red Bull running their racing program, came to an end. He lost an eye after a stone was thrown from Fittipaldi's car and hit his visor. Amazing how small this world is. When we interviewed Mr. Francois Castaigne, man who brought Turbo and Renault in Formula One for the first time, he told us he was sitting on the side of the track at the scene of the accident. Do you remember that, Clark?
No, absolutely. Great conversation with Francois.
Yeah, and amazing, huh? Now we come to the Le Mans circuit. We were talking about holding the French Grand Prix there at the Bugatti circuit. The only race here in 1967 was won by Brabham in a Brabham ahead of teammate from New Zealand, Mr. Denny Hall. And he was second, and Denny Hall went on to become world champion in 67. Now we come to Paul Ricard, home of the famous Mistral Strait. The French Grand Prix was held here 14 times between 1971 and 1990. In 1971, Jackie Stewart gave Ken Tyrrell his first 1-2 finish. Local driver François Sauvet, and talking of François Sauvet, you know, his sister was married to Jean-Pierre Beltoise. François Sauvet was second. Ronnie Peterson scored his first Grand Prix win here in 1973. And this race is remembered by a great performance by Jody Scheckter from South Africa in only his second race. He started from front row and was leading when he collided with second place man Fittipaldi, Emerson Fittipaldi, that is. Mario Andretti won at Paul Ricca in 1978, which was his championship winning year, with his Lotus, and final Formula One race at Paul Ricca was won by Monsieur Alain Prost over the Leighton House Jet of Ivan Capelli. Ayrton Senna was third in this race. You know, Ayrton Senna never won in the French Grand Prix, but Monsieur Prost won in Brazil like 5 or 6 times.
Exactly, and that's how we like it.
Really? Okay. Dijon Prenois. Even if each and every, just my personal opinion, even if each and every French Grand Prix was held at this track, one race will stand above all of them. Mr. Murray Walker, please.
And Villeneuve has had to go wide, and Arnoux's on the inside as they go round Villeroy. He's got the shorter line. He's got second position. He's got second position. He's through. They bang wheels. He's off. He's off. And he's back again. René Arnoux off the circuit and back again. And he's, and now Villeneuve's in second position. And this is the last lap. And Villeneuve goes over the corrugations, and he nearly loses the front as they go up to Parabolique on the 80th and last lap. And he's back. He's in second position. Villeneuve is second in the Ferrari. Down to third position goes Arnoux.
Thank you. History was made here in 1979 when Jean-Pierre Jabouille gave Renault their first Formula One victory, the first ever win by a turbo-powered car. But the real boost was behind him in the epic battle on the last lap between Gilles Villeneuve's Ferrari and René Arnoux in the second Renault. And folks, this is a must-see on YouTube. Formula One came to Dijon for the first time in 1974 with Ronnie Peterson winning in the beautiful black and gold JPS Lotus. Mario Andretti took the win on the last lap in 1977 when John Watson ran out of petrol in his Brabham Alfa Romeo. Alain Prost scored his first win here in 1981 with Renault, and the final Grand Prix at Dijon in 1984 was won by Niki Lauda in his McLaren. And folks, that is the honey mustard on tracks which have hosted the French Grand Prix.
Thank you, Nasser. Keep up the good work and outstanding French Grand Prix histoire. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the wrap-up, some shout-outs, and some thank yous. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kazim Manzoor. I am one of the first listeners of F1 Weekly, and I invite you to listen to my conversation with the Nairs man. And the topic of the day is my debut in Barcelona in single-seaters, and after my six-year karting career. Thank you very much.
Kazim, I thank you also for joining us again, and it was about 2 years ago that we met for the first time in Mariembourg, Belgium. You were in ICA Karting Junior, and here you are in motor racing. So first of all, congratulations, and how are things going for you these days?
Yeah, it's going very well. I mean, the transition from karting to cars has gone pretty smoothly. I mean, I still need to adjust to the slight details, but eventually I'll get there, and it's very fun. It's very good stuff.
Has the transition been more daunting than you thought or more challenging than you thought? How would you rate the challenges that you expected and that you have gone through now that the first round of races is behind you?
I mean, racing is a lot more challenging. The transition from karting to cars is a very big jump, especially as, first of all, I'm changing everything. So I have to learn how to use downforce, and using downforce is very weird because the faster you go into the corner, the more grip you have. So it's very different, but I'm getting there, and hopefully by mid-season I should be on the ultimate pace. So
now, nowadays there are so many feeder series, Formula Renault, Formula Masters, Formula BMW in the UK, which is where you are from originally, Formula Palmer and this and that. What made you decide on Formula BMW Europe?
Well, the main reason we chose Formula BMW Europe was because it was on the international scene in front of all the super Formula One gurus, and under their watchful eyes, it's better, because if you're racing around a track in England like Snetterton, it's hard for them to follow. As if you're actually racing on the same event, they can hear or they can hear what's going on and follow. So that's the main reason for more coverage, really. And obviously, it's one of the most, probably the most competitive junior series at the moment in cars. So I think that's why we chose it. Especially following the merger of the English and German form BMW, it's got best of both worlds. So.
Okay, now Formula BMW, it's a nice looking car. And of course, they have a Formula BMW series in the US now called Formula BMW Americas. Can you tell us a little bit about the car, please?
Well, the car is, the chassis is built by Mégal, which is a French manufacturer. And the engine is taken out of a BMW motorbike, and it has about 140 bhp. And it's sequential gearbox, not paddle, so.
Okay, now I understand there are some restrictions on testing, both before the season starts and during the season. Can you tell us a little bit about the series, how it handles the preseason testing, and then we'll talk about during the season?
Well, the test ban happened at the beginning of February, so you can test as much as you like before the beginning of February, and then after you only can test on official test days and rookie days, so that's the actual plan.
And I understand there are some restrictions also on tracks that you cannot test.
Yeah, it depends, because you have to choose which tracks you want to do the official test days on, and you can't do all of them. So if you have tested a lot on a certain track, you don't need to go there. So they're the rules for the testing.
In terms of preseason testing, what were the tracks that you tested, and how do you find the difference between one track to another, and how helpful really is that? Let's say, for example, I know you went to different tracks. Like, say you're at Hungaroring, which character is very different than, let's say, Pau, Arnaud's in France. So how helpful was that? And tell us about the tracks that you went to.
I think doing a lot of tracks, you learn a lot of different types of corners, and every track has its own character, like you said. So traveling all around Europe, I've gone to Spa and Hungaroring, Silverstone, Monza, also Pau, but not the street circuit, the normal circuit, and that's pretty much it. And Hockenheim, and Button Willow in America, in California. So, and they all have different characters. And I mean, the more tracks you test at, the better you're gonna get. And the more experience you get, obviously, the better you get. So, it's all about getting those laps in and learning every track that you can.
You tested at Button Willow in California, which is a purpose-built track for testing, a very nice facility. How was that experience, and what was the weather like in California compared to Europe at that time of the year?
Well, we traveled to California hoping for some dry testing, because the weather in Europe had been very wet, and I hear that California is only supposed to rain 2 or 3 days of the year, and we went there in the middle of the desert, and surprisingly, it managed to rain in Button Willow, so... Actually, I think every day it managed to rain. So, but anyway, wet testing is always good.
Of all the tracks you tested, which track really impressed you as a challenging track? And was there a track that you said, this is really boring?
Out of the tracks that I've done, I think a very challenging one is obviously Spa. Because of the gradient changes, it's always a challenge, which is very exciting for a driver. And also, Silverstone's quite challenged, because it's a very high-speed track. Tracks which were quite boring, I haven't really experienced any boring tracks at the moment. I really enjoyed Pau. That was a very good track. So, I mean, I still have to come across a track that I find boring. So.
Now, you tested at Sepang also. How was that track?
Well, I've never driven on a Herman Tilk design track, and it's a lot different to normal tracks, because he likes to trick out the drivers, which is surprising. I mean, on the entry to the corner, it's positive camber, and on the exit, it's negative, so it always tricks you out. But, I mean, it's a very nice track, Sepang, and I'm looking forward to going there soon.
I think those are instructions he gets from Bernie, because he likes to trick people. Okay, tell us about the selection of team. You are with one of the top teams, Josef Kaufmann, but there are other teams you tested with. What was the reason for selecting Kaufmann?
Well, the first ever team that I tested with was with Josef Kaufmann, and I'd always... From the first test I had, I was very impressed by the team. They were very efficient and very nice people, and they knew exactly what they were doing. And I never had any mechanical problems in testing, which is useful. I also did a test with Eifland, which is the other top German team, And that also went very well, but I only did one, like 2 days with him. So I'd already built a relationship with Joseph. But on speed-wise, I enjoyed both cars. They were both very good. And I also did a test with iSport, but that was a complete disaster. I did 20 laps, and then the engine going on into hangar straight struggled to get to fourth. So big mechanical problem there.
Now tell us a little bit about the licensing requirement. I understand there is a special category of licensing to compete in Formula BMW. And are there any restrictions if you have that license?
Yes, I got a International C, which allows me to race in Formula BMW, but it does not allow me to race in other categories such as Formula 3 or A1 GP, because I'd have to go up another stage of license. So I can do other Formula BMW events, because I can be a guest driver for the BMW Americas or the BMW Pacific Championship, but at the moment I'm just concentrating on Formula BMW and Europe. So.
Okay, how did you stack up in pre-season testing?
Pre-season testing has been very good. In the official test days, I've been every time in the top 10, and actually in the top 7, which is good. I'm looking for those last 3 to 4 tenths, which is always the hardest. You can knock off those seconds, but the last 3 tenths is the hardest. So I'm still searching for them, and I know where to find them. It's just applying it now.
Okay, now as a rookie, being in the top 7 is very impressive, because this field has about 30 drivers. Was that a surprise to you?
To be with Josef Kaufmann Racing?
No, to be in the top 7, first time out in open wheel racing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wasn't expecting to go to such a high-class profile series, but it's always best to race against the best and learn from the best. So I'm really happy with our decision.
Okay. Now, obviously, physical demands of being a racing driver would be higher than karting. Have you changed your physical training and how you prepare for races coming from karting to give us a little, uphill on this one?
I wouldn't say it's harder. You have to train different parts of your body. In karting, it's mainly on the wrists, and in cars, you move your entire arm. So in cars, I've had to start training a lot more on my upper body, like shoulders and neck, and also on my endurance, because I'm racing for a long time and testing for a long time. So I also do a lot of bike cycling. So. But yeah, I wouldn't say either one's harder than the other, because when I still go back to have a go in a car, my arms ache a bit.
Now, each team, I understand, is required to have 3 drivers. You're a rookie, and who are your teammates, and how is the situation between teammates?
My teammates are Esteban Gutierrez, who raced in BMW America last year, and Marco Wittmann, who raced in BMW German last year, so... They're both very top-class drivers, and they're always at the front, so it's very good for me to learn from their data and use their data, and I know that I'm comparing myself against the best, so it's very good for me.
Now, you've worked with them through extensive preseason testing, and you've just gone through your first race weekend. How is the team chemistry between drivers? Do you think that these are drivers who will help you, become more competition for them?
At the moment, they're helping me a lot, because I'm the rookie and they're trying to help me. And I'm sure they will do until the time that I become just as quick as them. And then the whole teammate thing will stop being all friendly. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'll check back with you in 10 months. Who's the Alonso and who's the Hamilton in the Kaufman team? No, we wish you all the drivers all the best and hope you guys behave. Okay, tell us a little bit about the qualifying format. How does that work in Formula BMW? Because they have 2 races, do they do qualifying? Explain to us the qualifying format, please.
Well, we have a half an hour qualifying, and the best time you do, your first time, the best time, is the time that is used for the first for the first race. And your second best time is used for the second race. So you have to get 2 times within 1/10 of each other to be at the very front in both races.
Okay. And both these times are set in the same qualifying session?
Yeah, in the same half-an-hour qualifying session.
Okay. And the races are normally on one on Saturday, one on Sunday?
Yes, one's on Saturday evening at about 6 o'clock usually, so it's quite a late race after the Formula 1. And then the other one's early on Sunday morning at about 9 o'clock.
Now, most of the races, not all, are on Formula One weekends. Tell us some of the events that you will be supporting a Grand Prix race.
We've already supported Barcelona. We'll be supporting Silverstone, Monza, also Spa, Hungaroring, Valencia Street Circuit, which would be fun, and also I think that's it.
Okay. Talking of Barcelona, tell us about how you qualified, how the race went. What was the biggest learning thing for you?
Well, the weekend was up and down. I mean, in testing, in like the quick free practice we had, I was definitely in the top 10. So I was expecting to get a 6th or a 7th in qualifying. But on team decision, we decided to go out in qualifying 4 minutes later than everyone else, which kind of was a bad decision because by then the track had changed a lot and everyone was going slower by that point. So I didn't really adapt as well as I would have liked, and I had a bad qualifying. I was starting 15th, which I wasn't really expecting, and was pretty disappointing. But after that, I went into the races with my hopes up high, and I had a 2.13th, which wasn't too bad, considering in the second race I dropped down to 21st because I had a bad start, and I managed to come back to 13th. So the biggest thing that I've learned from this weekend was to concentrate on my starts in the races and on qualifying, because qualifying is very important in motor racing. As in karting, you can jump from 15th to 1st, but I mean in cars it's very difficult. So my main area to focus on is on qualifying.
Now, driving a race car on a Grand Prix weekend in front of all the power brokers, was that on your mind, or once the race starts, everything goes out?
The only time it's on my mind is when you're in the paddock. I mean, you have to keep up your image and not be stupid, but when you're on the track, it all goes away. You're just racing, and that's the way it should be. I don't really feel the pressure of it. So,
Kazim, how did you do among the rookies?
Well, in the first race, I was top rookie, scoring 2 to 3 points. I finished 13th, and I was a top rookie. And in the second race, I was the third rookie. So overall in the championship, I'm third rookie.
Among the rookies?
Yeah.
What are your expectations and goal for the season? And I understand there are 8 rookies and from 30 drivers. So what are your expectations? What will make you happy? And where do you want to be at the end of the season?
My main expectations and goals is to be obviously rookie champion, and that's my main aim. And I'd love to be in the top 5 or 3, and I want to absorb as much as I can, like a sponge. I want to be a well-rounded racer at the end of this season who can maybe win the championship next year. But not a sponge like SpongeBob SquarePants. So.
We're on F1 Weekly, not Cartoon Network.
Sorry, NASA.
Okay, now as the season progressed, we have seen drivers who were... It normally is taking about 2 years for a driver in Formula BMW or in basically any other feeder series to really get to grips with and start winning a lot of races and, stamp the authority. When can we expect you on the podium, and when are you going to win a race and call me collect, hey, pal, I want a race?
I really realistically think that I should be able to be getting podiums and wins by mid-season. From the early pace that I've had, the team quite confident that by mid-season, if I continue my progress, I should be fighting for wins and podiums by mid-season, which is very encouraging. So hopefully I'll just keep hacking away at it, and by mid-season, end of season, I might be getting quite a few wins, so we'll wait and see.
We thank you for your time, and finally a message to listeners of F1 Weekly, please.
I've been a listener of F1 Weekly ever since it began, and both me and my father are great fans of the show, and I've met very good people through that show, such as you, NASA, and I'd like to say that I admire the show and everything that you guys do. I mean, the amount of the way you analyze the information that's given and you talk about it, it's very good. And I'm a pretty dedicated listener, so you got my attention.
Okay, will you please tell our listeners your website address, so they have your attention, they can follow your career.
My website address is www.kazeem-manzoor.com, kazeem-manzoor.com. And I'm sorry if there's no updates for the moment, but we're working on a new website, which will be under the same address, so just be patient with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, NASA.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now for the wrap-up, we bring in Steve Faub with the forum newsletter and updates.
I'm going to quickly run through the headlines in the forum newsletter. And basically, forum congratulates Robert's maiden win. A lot of talk about the Canadian Grand Prix. General newsletter information, some Bat Racer updates. Bravo, 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 Nasir. Compliments on the interviews. Happy birthday to Yay. Dr. Mark is on assignment. Little update on how I love to live in the countryside, how the F1 Weekly Forum Predictions Competition is going, and Mondeo versus Mazda. That's a long-running one. And then your monthly Pit Babe with her lovely endowments.
Real quickly, I want to apologize, everybody. We did have some technical difficulties with the front tabs on the front page of the website. A lot of people couldn't get to the forum. Toby has done an outstanding job, worked overtime yesterday to get that resolved. Keep up the good work, Toby.
And then a couple snippets from this week. The threat on the French Grand Prix is winding down. Most talked about the Hamilton penalty and that loose exhaust. There was a very useful thread called ITV Online Feeds. Martin Brundle's ITV features on 60 years of Silverstone has its own thread also. Ye is back and is in the lead in the predictions competition thanks to Massa's win. Super license costs and driver strikes thread has debated who actually pays the fee, the driver or the team. And in nearly related F1 section, we have new threads for tennis lovers with the Wimbledon 08 coming up. And of course, how I love to live in the countryside and Baked Beans United remain as strong as ever. And a topic about the front page access to the forum saw our webmaster swing into action and all is now corrected. Thanks, Toby. That's all for now. Keep up the good work. And thanks to Ye for those, it was Ye, right? For the snippets.
And thanks, Steve. Keep up the good work. We thank everybody who goes on the forum. It's a lot of good stuff, a lot of nice people. We have time for one email. We give that to Nasser, please.
Yes, it's from one of our regular listeners, Dr. Carey in San Diego. And he says hello to everybody.
Hey,
and this is what he wrote to me, very interesting. He sent me a couple of pictures, which I will email you and you can put on the website. He wrote to me that I went to Spa, the actual town in March, and stayed across the street from the actual Spa. Went to a nearby town where the museum is in an old abbey, which also housed an art museum with my wife, and I were very excited about it. In the basement, like the dungeon, is the auto museum with lots of cars, but also a topographical map of the area, the different towns, and the course. Clark, I am sure, has been there and will remember all this.
Absolutely. Spa-Francorchamps is just a wonderful place, deep in the Ardennes forest. Hopefully you get sunshine, and it's peppered with B&Bs, often just to get a room, you know, because sort of like Manicool, this is not in the middle of a huge metropolitan area. It's in the middle of the Ardennes forest. Your place to stay is all over the place, but they have a nice little museum.
Have you been to this dungeon?
I have been to the dungeon. I'm sure it's...
Was Max there?
Max wasn't there, but I heard some clicking in the back room. But no, it's a nice little museum. It's probably been updated. I haven't been in there since 1998.
Yeah. And you know, talking of Spa, I was just as a, you know, recommendation if somebody's interested. There's a website called italiaracing.net, italiaracing.net. If you go on that website, on the right-hand side, it's all in Italian and English also. There is a button for video, and they have a lot of videos of World Series by Renault, Formula 3 races and other stuff, mostly non-Formula 1 because of copyright issues. And last night I was watching a couple of rounds from Spa, and they were talking about this track, how nice it is and how you can roam around the circuit. I've never been there, passed through it though, but I have a few friends, and you're one of them, who has enjoyed going there.
I have enjoyed going there. It can get a little bit muddy.
That's what I've heard.
But, you know, pay extra money for the nice
paddock passes, and you'll be nice and comfortable.
For a seat in the grandstands?
Exactly. So, no, it's an experience, and not only that, but the whole area is beautiful to drive in. I enjoyed driving to Spa. It was just a blast, absolutely. Yeah. Just stay away from the Belgian gendarmes. Very tough people.
Yeah. So that's about it, and I would like to thank Dr. Beal for writing, and him and his wife for going on a trip to South Pacific. So have a good trip, and stay tuned to F1 Weekly, please, if possible.
Yeah, sounds like the good life. Okay, real quickly from Renault Histoire et Collection, they'll be at Le Mans. The World Series by Renault will be at Le Mans, France, September 6th and 7th. Another outstanding weekend. Great racing from the Junior Series. And, of course, they encourage everybody to bring your vintage Renault. It's a lot of fun.
Can I give a travel advisory to people? Yes. If anybody is going to the Italian Grand Prix this year at Monza, of course, the next weekend is the first race of the A1 GP at Mugello, which is near Florence. So, you know, if you're interested, you can do both of them. And this year they will be using cars which are based on the 2004 Ferrari and Florence and Tuscany area. Very, very nice.
And they'll be Ferrari powered.
You betcha. And there'll be Team USA, of course, with, you know, hopefully Jonathan Summerton.
I hope so, too. Keep up the good work, Nas. Thank you very much. Real quickly, if you're in the San Francisco area, check out www.sff1.com, the San Francisco Formula One group. If you're in town, they get together all the time at the Overtime Bar and Grill. Outstanding group. Peter, keep up the good work there. Go to our MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who makes this show possible. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.